This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Are Ipswich's automatic promotion hopes dwindling, or is there more to come from town? Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, following the fortunes of Ipswich Town since 2015. My name is Craig Fimbo, and I'm joined by two fellow North Enders, Seb Brown and Mikey Penty-Smith. Mikey, how are you? Purely concentrating on away matches at the beginning of the year after your trip to Wimbledon. How was yesterday and how have you been?
Yesterday was all right. Aside from that first 45 minutes of football, I'd say it was nice to see a new ground and have a day out with friends and see some familiar faces. Good to see Kiefer Moore, of course. But yeah, pretty depressing result, wasn't it?
Yeah, we might go through it in a little bit more detail in a little bit. Seb, how are you? How was your journey and how was your chauffeuring? How were your chauffeuring exploits this week?
Roads were fine. The company, as always, was questionable. Deepdale became my most visited game ground outside of Portman Road this weekend. It was my seventh trip there, plus the preseason game. So my eighth trip there across the years. And yeah, hopefully I won't have to do it again next year.
Oh, crikey. That's the first time I've ever been there. Was yesterday.
Oh, is it? So, yeah. See, for me, other than Stoke, it's pretty much my closest game. So it would be rude not to after all those years. So.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Oh, good work. Good evening to everyone that's watching live. We are, as ever, live on YouTube and will be available after the event on YouTube and also your podcast search engine of choice. I've put a few hellos up in the chat underneath. But yeah, so say hello. And then obviously, as ever, if you want to get a question in for the guys to go through and answer a little later on, please do. Please, as ever, stick a cue at the beginning and it sort of helps me find it as we plow our way through the match and bits and pieces like that. But as ever, we'll do it towards the end, back end of the pod. In terms of news, we'll go through before we get round to talking about the match. After 61 appearances and 6 goals, it was announced that Lee Evans was to leave town for a chance to play somewhere else, hopefully before the end of the season, once he gets up to speed and gets back to fitness, which we'll obviously look after him while he's doing so. Seb, a sad day for your fellow countrymen, but an important piece of a promotion jigsaw.
He wasn't he? Yeah, I guess, you know, the latest one of these. What did Joe term them as, promotion babies, was it? He kind of used the phrase in our Telegram group a few weeks ago. And every time one departs, there is, I guess, a tinge of sadness. He was the second signing, wasn't he, of Game Changer after Wes Burns, I think. It was the one that everybody knew was going to happen because obviously he played under Paul Cook at Wigan and was very well known to him. And yeah, he was an important part throughout the various seasons. He always only managed half a year with us. That was the problem. The first season got the hat-trick against Doncaster under Cook under the lights, which I thought was going to get us up and running that season. Never really happened. Got a bad injury in the February time, I think. But the first half of last season is probably his best spell for us, wasn't it? Alongside Morsy, up until he picked up an injury kind of in the autumn when we were down to bare bones until we managed to get Luongo across the line. And yeah, a classy player. You know, those big switches, the passing range, probably unlike anybody else in the squad, I would suggest at the time. He could make those big switches out to either flank, sitting slightly deeper, added a bit of physicality, bit of a set piece threat from corners. He, you know, scored a penalty, I remember, away at Morecambe. We'd missed a penalty in the game and he scored a second penalty that day to get us across the line. And yeah, another player who has contributed and now has moved on. He's about a month away from fitness, I think they said, isn't he? And I think we all expected him to be released in the summer. You know, he played one game this year at Huddersfield in the league when Morsy was sitting out with a 5-match suspension, and he did look slightly off it, but he's a different player to Morsy, so that's not entirely unexpected. And I guess we all thought there'd be a parting of the ways in the summer. We knew somebody had to drop out of the squad. There was ummings and ahrings over, you know, would you deregister a Luko? Would Dominic Ball move on? And in the end, it's releasing him to give him a chance to get up to fitness in a month's time and hopefully go out and win himself a contract at League One, League Two, maybe a lower-end championship club. And is he 31? I think he's not that old, is he? 31, no. 32, so he's still got a bit of football left in him. And obviously, we wish him well, a key part at vital times in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you say, a vital part at times of the season, but only up until about January time when his knee tended to fall to pieces, unfortunately, for the guy. But Mike, he was just one of those solid characters, wasn't he? You could just tell from the way he spoke and tell by the way he was in and around the club that he's just definitely one of those tick the box characters that every football club needs that you can hang your hat on. But just unfortunately, I think that the step up that we've made, similar to some of our players who will probably find over the next 6 months, maybe to a year, our ceiling, as we've spoken about others, is probably going higher, and possibly our physicality and the need for a bit more mobility in midfield is, you know, allowed us to let him go.
Yeah, unfortunately, we'll never know, will we, if he was capable of making that step up. And I know McKenna had said at some point that he was hoping that he could improve in the same way that Sam Morsy has. And he was such an intelligent player and he was a good technical player, a good physical presence as well, wasn't he? So, he didn't have that sort of turn of pace and maybe was lacking the mobility that was needed. But who knows, he might have found a role. But this year, especially, he just badly needed just a run of games and staying fit. And the unfortunate thing is, he would have had a hell of a lot of games had he not had that injury. With everything that's gone on, he could have been a really important player for us, especially over the Christmas period. But yeah, he carried on doing the work in the community as well. I kept seeing him pop up on social media doing things, bits and bobs over the last few weeks, and there was absolutely no bitterness at all from him. He was quite emotional, I think, on social media when the time did come for him to move on.
Yeah. And I'd say he'll, like everybody else in that squad, they leave with everyone's best wishes, don't they?
Oh, yes. And
in terms, obviously, the transfer window slammed shut during the week. It's been covered in some detail by the pod by virtue of individual pods about individual players. And also Joe and I did a bit of a roundup on transfer deadline evening. I think, Mikey, you're the only person we haven't really heard about in regards to the dealings of the January transfer window. Do you want to just give us a quick overview of how you saw things, bearing in mind we'll talk about at least two of the guys that signed in a little bit?
Yeah, well, it was a frustrating month, wasn't it? Because it just went on and on and on forever. But I think at the start, we were all in agreement that we needed two strikers, and that was the thing that we most needed. And we managed to pick up a really serviceable Championship midfielder as well. And then we've brought in a little bit more flair at the attacking end with Sarmiento as well. It was a shame that it went to deadline day, but that was probably always going to happen, wasn't it? The so many moving parts. It would have been nice to get Gallagher. I think we're all in agreement on that. But yeah, I was pleased that we managed to get Kiefer Moore, and Al-Hammadi could be a really important player for us as well in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And it was quite interesting to listen to the Kiefer Moore interview, which I didn't get to listen to until after Joe and I had spoken about. But he sort of intimated that it had been a deal that had potentially been in the workings for a little while before it actually came to fruition right towards the end. As you say, Michael, we just have no idea about the number of complexities and implications and intricacies and how everything's linked to each other and knock-on effects, like buying a house, isn't it? You just don't know how many links are in that chain before it actually gets down to the one that you're interested in. So yeah, I think the feeling in the chat that evening as well was it was a very positive transfer window. So now it just transpires how that pans out between now and hopefully very early May. So let's move on to the weekend. Let's move on to our trip up north to Deepdale, where we were hopefully looking for a bit of a reaction to last week's match, which we no longer speak about. The town team had two changes to the last league game that we played. Sam Morsey came in the centre midfield, replacing Travis, and Sarmiento came in for Marcus Harness after a couple of decent cameo appearances for Sarmiento. And both Harness and Travis dropped down to the bench. And probably the key take from this was the, as I said earlier, the two strikers being on the bench, Kiefer Moore, Ali Al-Hammadi, both been on the bench. Anything in that lineup, Seb, that particularly surprised you, or anything you'd have potentially done differently?
No, me and Rich discussed it on the pre-match show, and the two areas we were unsure about was the left-hand attacker and the central striker. We both kind of agreed that Sarmiento probably deserved a start given his equaliser against Leicester, his goal against Maidstone. Broadhead's not really been back at full races, has he, recently, for the last kind of month or 6 weeks or so. So no surprise to see Sarmiento come in from the start there. And then it was the number nine position. I've seen a lot of stuff today on kind of social media stuff that, you know, we should have started Kiefer Moore. We would have won the game if he'd started. But like me and Rich kind of debated, you know, I thought he might do it. Rich said he'll go for Jackson, and McKenna, being the methodical, well thought through, process driven manager he is, I think was always obviously going to play the striker who's had a full week's worth of training, who's integrated into our patterns of play, who knows his roles in the 11. We've got to remember that Al-Hammadi was still in Qatar as of, was it Tuesday, Wednesday, so barely had any game, any time on the training pitch. More signed
and injured
Thursday
as well, with a knock,
and injured at the time. More signs Thursday afternoon. They probably travel up Friday morning. So to throw him in, I think, would have been very un-McKenna-ish. So not really surprised if Jackson start at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kicked off and, we started quite slowly, but we didn't really have time to start very slowly. But within pretty much the first minute of the game, Liam Miller had an opportunity down the left, which he sort of sliced into the crowd on the volley. And even, I think, from that first goal kick after that chance, you could see the Preston press was pretty aggressive and pretty intense. They had almost six of their players lined up along our 18-yard box, waiting to pounce on whether it be our centre-halves, our centre-midfielders or our full-backs. And Mikey, it was a bit of a double whammy. And in the first 7 or 8 minutes, we find ourselves in this spot of bother.
Yeah, like you say, immediately trying to play out from the back and from quite far back in the away stand. Like, I wasn't, indeed you were, Craig. I think you were the row behind. You could see the pitch was really, really bad, couldn't you? Really, really patchy. And it just, the ball was just sticking and it looked heavy. So that makes playing out from the back a little bit more difficult, because passes around the corner are going to be harder. The ball sticks under your feet a little bit more when you initially bring it under control. So even somebody who with a first touch as good as Sam Morsey is going to struggle now and again getting the ball out of his feet so he can make the pass nice and quickly. Quite often, like, a lot of teams have done that to us, and they've really, you can tell that they've spent all week on the training ground trying to counteract us playing out from the back. And sometimes that can work in your favour, because they're bringing themselves really high up the pitch and committing bodies forward, which should give us space higher up the pitch. Yeah. However, we were just struggling to execute it. We were playing out as we normally do. So this one, Will Keane sort of reads the pass really well into the feet of Morsy, doesn't he? Sees it coming, but he does kind of come through the back of Morsy. Potentially a foul there. It was a sort of a 50-50.
Mm.
And then Luongo goes in for a 50-50, doesn't he? Was it Potts that he went in for that challenge?
Right in the middle of the pitch,
Just unfortunate that he came out second best. He's made the lunge at the right time, and it's bounced into the feet of Will Keane. Now, Will Keane, from 30 yards out, I'm not overly concerned about him, as he's a really elegant footballer, but he doesn't, for a striker, doesn't have a fantastic shot on him, and he's completely scuffed it. But I think because Edmondson is kind of getting his body set to try and block it with his upper body or something like that, he's planted his feet, which has meant that because the ball's come so slowly, he's had just about enough time to react to it, but not enough time to actually get his foot in front of the ball. So he's deflected it. And from where I was stood, Craig, the ball looked like it was going way wide.
Mm.
And unfortunately, Edmondson has just made a connection to it, and it didn't lose any pace, but it completely changed the direction. And Hladký has managed to react to it, but couldn't get to it. So yeah, that was 1-0, and just a nightmare start. I mean, that we haven't scored the first goal in a league game since the Norwich game now, and conceding early goals has been quite a constant thing as well. Probably dating back to the West Brom defeat back in, I think, November, wasn't it? It seems to just be something that we just can't shift at the moment.
Yeah, we seem to struggle to these slow starts. We don't seem to be able to shake off, don't we? And even if we don't happen to concede early, and I'll give you a stat after you've gone through the second goal, but it just seems to be, for some reason, we just seem to be sluggish. And you know, we know that we're very good at coming back from goals down, but I'm sure there's the stat, isn't there, that the teams that score first in matches tend to win them 70-80% of the time. So you don't really want to be going behind. I'm sure it's something that they're looking at, et cetera. But hot on the heels of a heavily deflected goal from one corner of the goal to the other, we find ourselves two down 3 minutes later.
Yeah, and the way we lost the ball here just felt like it was just so typical of the entire first half, where we've got up into the Preston half and just our passing was just way off it and our touch was way off it. And I think it was Burns that loses possession, or between Burns and Chaplin, they lose possession, but we're safely up in the Preston half. And it's played up to Will Keane on the half turn. And he does this really well. He takes the ball in the half turn and immediately plays a nice through ball to the attacker. It's Reese, isn't it? But he's a good 2 yards offside. Edmondson has stepped up. Yeah, we can see it there. Like, we've actually played that quite well. And you can see Miller on the left-hand side of the screen is thinking,
I'm offside here.
I'm offside, and this is probably the end of this move, because he can also see that his mate is offside as well. Edmondson's done a good job of stepping up. Unfortunately, the linesman, even though he's perfectly placed and he's concentrating, didn't see it. Edmondson then does really, really well to get back. He covers up the ground really well as Reese is trying to slow himself down and compose himself for the finish. And I think it might have crossed Edmondson's mind to slide in, but I think that was his only hope of making a tackle. And he probably thought, already 1-0 down, and how many minutes into the game were we? It was less than 10 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, 8, I think.
8 minutes. Yeah. I guess he felt like he couldn't commit and risk the penalty. And as it is, he just
pokes it beautifully, effortlessly.
Yeah, pokes the ball past Hladký. A really composed finish, you could say, from Edmondson there. And I think we were all in disbelief, weren't we?
Yeah, very much so. Because, you know, we've seen us come back from 1-0 before, so I don't think there was much panic in the crowd, especially doing it that early. You think, well, we've got an entire match now to get back into it. And I think there was an awful lot of positivity going into the game on the back of recent league performances in any case. But the thing is, from the offside decision, what exacerbated it being an obvious offside was that Edmondson was travelling up the pitch. So it would have magnified the fact that it was offside, you would have thought, from a linesman's perspective. But these are Premier League officials, as as I'm led to believe. But as you rightly say, it's 2-0, and we do concede a lot. And Dan in our Telegram group put a fact stroke stat in there earlier on today, saying that we've now conceded 9 goals in the first 10 minutes of matches, which is the worst record in the league. So, you know, we're our own worst enemies in that respect, and I'm sure it's something that we are trying to put right as a group, and it remains to be seen whether that's that comes to fruition or not. The rest of the half, really, as you said, Mikey, it was very obvious that our passes just were not reaching their intended recipients. Well, there was plenty of times that Burns had the ball, for example, and was looking. And Burns isn't renowned for the subtlety of his pass at the best of times. He does tend to give them a bit of oomph, and they just didn't seem to be getting to their intended recipient. Same with Luongo. I thought I had a pretty ropey, certainly first 25, 30 minutes of the half. Morsi was getting caught on the ball. How much of that was down to performance? How much of that was down to the press of Preston? How much of that was down to the pitch? Or a combination of all three, who knows? But it wasn't really until the 30th minute that we started to put a little bit of our normal passing and movement together. Preston were continuing to press, but weren't really creating too much themselves. Until such time, Seb, I say, talk about the Preston press. It strikes again just before 40 minutes.
Yeah, when things aren't going well, it really goes against you, isn't it? So Wolfenden's got the ball on the right-hand side outside of the area, plays it back to Hladký, and as you said, you know, we saw Reece and Keane and Frokje Jansen were just going in, weren't they, on the two centre-halves. They were constantly putting them under pressure. Reece is chasing the ball down. Hladký finds Morsi pretty much in the D, isn't he? And Jensen is just there on him straight away. And we've seen Morsi do it so many times, isn't he, where he'll kind of take it on the half turn, drop a shoulder, beat his man, look to drive up the pitch. But I think he's probably, you know, looking to find Wolfenden again, and kind of Wolfenden's moved into a little bit of space that's been vacated by Reece running in. But Frokje Jensen gets a touch on the ball. Obviously, Morsi then reacts well and goes into slide to try and make the block. And when your luck's out, it's out. They get a bit of a kind of falling of the ball. Will Keane is then obviously running in and slots it home. And at that point, you're thinking, you know, a lot of people around me were cursing the playing out from the back. And you do kind of feel like saying, have you seen how we've played football for the last kind of, you know, 2 years under McKenna? This is what we do. We can't go long down the centre of the pitch because their centre halves are 6'2", 6'3". And that's not Caden Jackson's game. So as per Watford, you know, we've given a goal away there in mid-December and come back and got the result that night. Yesterday, we obviously didn't come back. We lose the game. But it's only 2 goals conceded from playing out the back in, you know, 18 months, whatever it's going to be now. So it's not something that happens overly, you know, overly a lot. And we've scored, as McKenna said, so many goals have come from us starting off by playing out the back. It's just how we play football. It's high risk, high reward. That one goes against us. And I think at that point, 3-0, we were all kind of a bit shell-shocked in the stand, weren't we? Like you said, at 1-0, you're still pretty confident. 2-0, okay, we're 2-0 down, but we've still got 80 minutes plus stoppage time of the game to go, so you never know. But 3-0 in the 39th, 40th minute, whatever it was going to be, that looked a long, long way home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll when we get to the end of the match, I'll ask you guys some questions about that. And there's some questions already, or some comments already in the chat in regards to how we play and potentially how we potentially want to change things during matches, but we'll come to that. In terms of the rest of the half, not an awful lot more happened. I think Clark had a shot. I think pretty much our first shot, we stabbed wide just in injury time in the first half. And that was pretty much all she wrote. In terms of the stats, they're pretty damning from our perspective. I'll pop them up on the screen for those of you who are watching. What do you think, Mikey? Potentially our worst half of football under Kieran McKenna so far. We've got an XG. I know people don't like XG, but an XG of 0.17, which does tell the tale of the match that was unfolding before our eyes. Preston have had an awful lot more shots than we did, albeit maybe not too many clear-cut shots, but going 3-0 up on the back of an XG just over 0.5 goals. But it wasn't a great half of football.
No, and it was, yeah, easily the worst half of football I've seen under Kieran McKenna. And I just don't think that we managed the game or the conditions well at all. You could see that what a sticky half of the pitch that was. And we just didn't play the conditions at all. There was one quite early on where Burns got played in behind down the right and went to play a first time ball, and you like on the Portman Road pitch and at King Power, by all means do that. But on a pitch like that where you can't guarantee how the ball is going to bounce up, you just have to play it, just have to take a touch and just play slightly safer. And I think it's difficult to play safe when you go behind, because you want to be even more aggressive. But yeah, I was quite worried at halftime that we were going to have to go all out attack in the first half, and we were going to leave ourselves massively exposed at the back. I could see us conceding more goals the way things were going. And yeah, Preston had a really good tactical plan, and they activated it quite well, and obviously had a lot of luck. And we didn't deserve any luck with just the way that we were playing. We just weren't doing the basics right at all. But then there is that in the back of your mind, you're thinking that Kieran McKenna is so good at getting a reaction out of the team. And so often we come out in the second half and we're a completely different outfit. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. But apart from looking forward to seeing Keeper Moore come on, I was kind of thinking this game is probably lost.
Yeah, and it probably would have needed a very early goal in the second half if we were to change it around. As you say about seeing Kiefer Moore, I don't think it was much of a surprise to anybody in the crowd that he went through a more intensive warm-up through half-time than the rest of his substitute teammates, and indeed was a substitute made at half-time. He came on for Caden Jackson, and within, I think, 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds of the half starting, he had won a header, which he probably didn't have any right to have done. He certainly wasn't the favourite to have won it. And there's a concerted effort of pressure now from us. Leif Davis has a very, very clever free kick just outside the box to the left on his side, where, I think Oscar season is upon us, isn't it? We're certainly around film award time, and he did very much he didn't give the goalkeeper the eyes. He gave the goalkeeper the full, I am going to cross it over there towards Kiefer Moore arm suggestions, and then clipped it around the edge of the wall. And unfortunately for us, hit the post and came back out. 50 minutes. This is when the crosses start coming in. There's a cross from Burns onto Moore's head. There's a cross from Davis onto Moore's head. And for those of you that either weren't there or didn't get to see it online or how you tend to watch the matches, it was a transformation from the first half in terms of having a presence up front. And it's no disrespect to Caden Jackson. Caden Jackson is what Caden Jackson is. He has his strengths, etc. What his strengths aren't is, as I said earlier, winning headers that he has no right to win, and also holding off a couple of defenders at once, which is obviously something that George Hurst can do as well. But the crosses then started to rain into the Preston box. Now, there was some thought and intelligence behind the crosses that were put in, but all of a sudden we had something to aim at, and you could see there was a surge of positivity going through both the crowd and indeed the players. Sadly, that early goal just didn't come. And as I say, as time was ticking on, it was getting less and less likely that we'd be able to turn it around. However, we made a couple of subs. Sarmiento and Chaplin came on for Broadhead and... Sorry, Sarmiento and Chaplin went off for Broadhead and Hutchinson. And then, talk me through this, Seb. The Vaclav Hladký back pass from... What a shit show that was.
Yeah, complete cluster F, wasn't it? Yeah, we got away with one there. I know we were cursing the officials in the first half for the lack of the offside and maybe the foul on Morsey in the build-up to the first goal, but we completely got away with one there. He passed it out to Morsey, he takes the return. And is he trying to do a drag back to kind of beat his man and try...
Air shots, basically, doesn't he?
Yeah, completely messes that up. And then he realises, and I thought he'd brought the guy down from where I was viewing it, so I thought we got away with that one. On the replay, it's quite clear, isn't it? He just pushes it away to Morsey, who plays it out wide. So it's an indirect free kick, 5 yards dead central in the middle of the goal is what it should have been, but thankfully the fairly hapless officiating went in our favor that time, because that was a real nightmare. If that had gone in, if he does the drag back and it goes wrong and they tap the ball home, it kills all of our momentum, doesn't it? And it's two errors playing out from the back, so the picture probably looks a lot different. So we have to thank the officials a little bit there for being completely hapless for both Preston and ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was also a kick in the face for our captain in the first half, for which he got spoken to by the referee and then pushed off the pitch by the referee because he was bleeding from the face, having been kicked in the face. And then the game just carried on with him off the pitch for 30 seconds, as the referee is bound to do, because he didn't bother booking the guy who'd kicked our captain in the face, resulting in blood coming from his face.
There wasn't a single booking, was there, in the game? He was determined.
He was determined to not make any bookings, and it can be a good thing to have a ref that doesn't want to stop the play and give out bookings. But it just became absolutely ridiculous. He just didn't want to make a decision, and the Hladký one is absolutely ludicrous. Like, what has he seen there? Mm. Like, I'm not angry about it because obviously it would have been against us. But what has he? Like, what does he think he's seen for it not to be an indirect free kick and a sending off? Like, just absolutely bizarre. But
yeah, an indirect free kick from about a foot off the goal line, that would have been fun. Right, just a quick one here. Lewis, if you're back, we're going to go through the first goal. So hopefully you're back by now. Mikey, after this pressure and after these crosses in the box, eventually, maybe a bit too late on 75, we get a goal back.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take us back half an hour, Craig, to half time. I was watching Kiefer Moore going through this warm up, and it was quite interesting to me that he was being given cutbacks and he was just tapping them into an empty net. I don't know if that was just to get his eye in or maybe just getting used to the pitch. That's not a bad plan, is it? But it was quite funny how all of those cutbacks were on the ground. And then as soon as he comes on, everything that goes towards Kiefer Moore is an aerial ball into the box. But yeah, this one wasn't Morsey's best day, but this was a really good interception from him. Really typical Sam Morsey play down the right channel. And he drives forward, plays it into Broadhead. And it looks like Broadhead might potentially be in, but it kind of closes out to him. And he takes a nice recovery touch and pushes the ball out onto the left, plays the ball down for Leif Davis. And when we don't have a Kiefer Moore on the pitch or a George Hurst, or to be honest, even when we have got George Hurst, this has to be a whipped in ball, probably on the ground, maybe just at chest height. But because it's Kiefer Moore, this is a much easier skill. You just chip it up into the air and it loops over onto the back post. And I think I heard a few people sort of groan as the ball came into the box, because typically chipped balls into the box are completely useless for us. But then in comes Kiefer Moore from absolutely nowhere, just smashes through two defenders and just beautifully heads the ball down into the goal. I've seen somebody in the chat compare it to Paul Mariner. I've seen footage of Paul Mariner. I think it's a fair comparison. Reminded me of goals from James Scowcroft in the late 90s as well, where he's just bundled in at the back post. But yeah, gave us hope. But at this stage, it's really, really important that we then built on it almost straight away, wasn't it? And as we're going to get onto, that just didn't happen.
No, sadly not. But there was literally nothing was going to stop Kiefer Moore from heading that ball into the goal, was there? You could just see it from a mile off. He was going to take everything with him if it needed to, and he was going to get that ball into the goal one way or another.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The headers continued. Burns had a couple of headers at goal. Maybe one of them he should have, I think from memory, should have laid across rather than go for goal. And then shortly afterwards, he's replaced along with Massimo Longo for Alhamady and Harness, where we've now... Talk to me what formation we were playing once these two guys had come on. We were sort of going for it, as much as we tend to do, as much as we've ever done under Kieran McKenna, Seb. But there's a slight, I think, tweak in the formation.
Yeah, it seemed to be that obviously Harness kind of went more central, didn't he, with Morsey. And I guess Morsey was almost a one-man kind of defensive screen, and it was everyone else kind of pushing forward. And at times, Alhamady would be right up alongside Kiefer Moore looking to win the flick downs and stuff. Hutchinson went over to the right, which is where the second goal of Kiefer Moore starts from. And Broadhead was finding pockets of space, kind of drifting in and going out wide as well. So it was getting to the stage, wasn't it, where we just had to get as many attacking players on the pitch as we could. And, you know, Wolfenden and Edmondson were really pushing up. They were on the halfway line quite a lot of the time, and they were looking to make inroads into the Preston half as we were just launching it time after time to try and win a flick on or make something happen in the box in the dying embers of the game.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting about we were still quite measured in our approach to the goal. It wasn't as if we were lumping it from front to back on the hope that it would just deflect off Moore's head into someone's path. There was still an element of patience and taking your time, still trying to find the right angle to get the cross in. And you would hope that over the course of the next week or so, that would just be something that's worked on even more once we know what Kiefer Moore's preferences are in terms of areas of the box he likes to attack, etc., etc. Alhamady has a bit of a tussle to get into the box himself, doesn't he? In the inside right channel, he's got a couple of guys in and around him on his back, and he manages to get a shot away, just not quite getting on target. But on 87, Seb, the guy that's going to fire us to promotion glory, gets his second goal on his second debut.
Yeah, and as you say, it comes from more kind of measured playing to the box, doesn't it? Wolfenden, I think, wins a tackle. Morsey wins a tackle, picks the ball up and looks to drive like we know Sam Morsey does. And he finds Hutchinson, is in a bit of space, I think, on the right-hand side. He drops a shoulder, goes past his man, stands up across to the kind of the back post-ish where Leif Davis is, who knocks it back across goal. And then you've got both Moore and Alhamady going for the same ball and kind of getting each other's way a little bit. Alhamady reacts really well, kind of gets an effort off, which the keeper saves. It's almost a point blank range, isn't it? Keeper saves, but it falls nicely for Kiefer Moore, who gets up nice and quickly and side foots home. And what, 3 minutes to go, and you're probably thinking 5 minutes or so of time to add on, we might get something out of this. But yeah, another kind of calm, side footed, nice finish by Kiefer Moore after a bit of chaos thrown in when they were both going for the same ball.
Yeah, and personally, I think it would have been lovely for Alhamady to have scored that. I think it ends up hitting Woodman's face, doesn't it, or something along those lines.
But goal of the season, was it?
No, absolutely not. But it was good, as you say, Seb, to have two of our strikers, inverted commas, within 3 or 4 yards of the goal, both of them desperate to score, both of them, you know, hacking away at the ball. Is just what you're going to have to do in certain times, certainly in the 85th minute, wherever it was, of a game where you're already 3-1 down. It's just good to see that. And actually, the reaction from Moore was good, to get off his backside and steady.
He's up quickly, isn't he, for a big guy? He gets up very quickly and obviously sides foot home. So, yeah, I guess we kind of thought maybe we might pull off a miracle, what it would have seemed at halftime. And I guess, yeah, we'll discuss the overall the game. But start suddenly with 2 goals from Moore, you're starting to feel a bit better about the whole thing, aren't you, rather than how bad we were all feeling at the halftime point.
Yeah, gets up quick for a big guy. There's another more in time for another more header. This time it's straight at Woodman. We have a couple more shots, but unfortunately, Preston weather the storm. and see out the 3-2 win from their perspective. It turns into only our fourth defeat of the season. However, as we'll see later when we go through the results, it drops us down to fourth place, albeit with Leeds above us having played one more game, I believe. Form-wise, we've only won one of our last eight games in the Championship, which means we are 19th in that particular form table, the eight-game form table. Do either of you want to take a guess? Ipswich Town are 19th in the eight-game form table. Which three teams do you reckon are currently positioned 1, 2, and 3 in that same form table?
I think we both know, don't we? So clearly the three that have frustratingly eaten away at our points gap and now sit above us in the league. Some of them, Southampton are just ridiculous, aren't they? It's a new club record, isn't it? 21 games unbeaten or something. They are just absolutely relentless at the moment. But yeah, this is how it goes. We tend to have these mid-season mini blips, don't we? Look what we did last year. I'm not saying we'll do the same thing again, obviously, but you know, we never write off this side, because now we're down to fourth. You know, the pressure is, well, it's never been on us, has it? It's always been on those three, kind of, they're the three that have to go back up with parachute payments, etc. So yeah, the pressure isn't off us, because it was never really on us, but maybe now we can quietly go about our business and hit another decent run of form.
Yeah, absolutely. But so just in terms of the second half, I'll bring up the stats very quickly for it. As you can see, for those of you watching again, this is the second half statistics. More possession, 22 shots apparently in that second half, with an XG of 2.44, 9 shots on target. Overall, excuse me, yeah, Preston managed to score 3 goals from an XG of less than 0.75. 25 shots for us, 9 shots on target. But unfortunately, just a little bit too little, too late. The momentum charts, which is sometimes a good guide, just goes to show the chalk and cheese of first half and second half, I think. Very much it's just unfortunate that the two goals that we scored in the second half didn't come during our initial peaks of higher momentum, shall we say. So yeah, please feel free, everyone who's in the chat, get your questions in. I see a few of them there already. Please put a queue at the beginning and I shall endeavour to pick them up. But just a question from me, and it's been some of the questions in the chat. I'll see if I can find them as I talk about it. But what do you guys think we could have potentially done differently in the first half? Once we knew that Preston were starting to put that press on us, could we have done anything differently, or are we just so ingrained into playing a certain way in this style that it's just something that we have to keep doing by virtue of us being coached that way, or potentially because Caden Jackson, Connor Chaplin, Wes Burns and Jeremy Simeone weren't having the greatest of games, so even a chip ball over the top of the press into them may not have come off. Mikey?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we could have played Burns slightly deeper and kind of gone into a match them up in a wing back formation just for a little spell, and then Kladke can clip the ball out wide to Davis and Burns because they would have been a little bit more free. I think that was one of the big problems for us, is we just couldn't get Davis up the pitch and Jackson basically had no channel to run into because basically Burns was up there alongside him, and you end up with Jackson just playing with his back to goal through the middle, which just doesn't work. I think we could have maybe just been a little bit more conservative in possession. I know that isn't our style, and I'm not saying that we needed to completely abort it. And this is after the facts. Obviously, I've seen us concede these goals that they're in the flesh. So I'm kind of being the expert after the facts. But I always feel like on a pitch like that, especially as they'd clearly dried that half of the pitch up to try and stop us playing slick passing, maybe we could have just played a little bit more safe. And I guess the other thing that you do is you just move players around the pitch a little bit more. Maybe you switch the wingers, do little things like that. But to be honest, that's not really McKenna's style either, is it?
Do you think there's a... excuse me, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, everybody. Please don't crucify me this. But do you think there's a lack of adaptability or freedom to make your own changes during the course of a match? Because you'd think that if we can see from the stands that we're getting pressed the hell out of here, and just to take a bit of pressure off at some point, somehow just get, because I know the long, if you go long, you risk the, you risk losing the ball and it coming back to you anyway. But in-game management, or whatever you want to call it, now, do you think that the guys have got the freedom to make those changes should they feel the need to?
I think we're so indoctrinated into the process that, you know, we've proven for 18 months that this style of football does work, doesn't it? You know, like Mikey said earlier, teams that press you high, that can work in your advantage, because if you spring the press, you've suddenly got a lot of space to attack into, which is what we've seen, you know, countless times in the last 18 months or so. So, yeah, I mean, without Kiefer Moore up front in the first, the logical answer in the first half is you start going long a bit, don't you, in the hope that Moore wins a flick on to play in Burns or Sarmiento, or just holds the ball up and waits for runners to get in and around him. And without him on the pitch in the first 45, there was no going long option. Like Mikey says, all I could think you could do is start to use the fullbacks more. Maybe don't kind of pass out to your two centre halves, because you've got Will Keane and that Reese chap straight on them. Just look to maybe go out to the fullbacks a little bit more. But yeah, conditions didn't help. But you know, this side is so ingrained playing this style of football, which has proven ridiculously successful, that there's not always the need to mix it up, because we have such a huge body of work that proves how successful this is, that you kind of, you know, you keep doing it. Like we saw with the Watford goal, you know, we conceded early on with the Watford mess up, and we played out from the back even more, didn't we? And it's that's kind of our default response sometimes. But with a Kiefer Moore up front, then yeah, you can change your playing style, but that simply wasn't an option for the first 45.
Yeah. No. Watford was, that was a nice deck though, wasn't it? Like, it was a
True. Yeah, the pool, the pitch was shocking, wasn't it? When I kind of got up, I was up sort of a row 34, 35, so I kind of had a decent view of the whole pitch, and it just looked ropey as hell.
Yeah,
it was churning up in the practice, wasn't it? The practice goal area they had to the side of the actual goal was like a ploughed field by the time we'd finished playing there. As Chris says here, the pitch was appalling, but we should have adapted better. You may be right. I'm going to talk here just briefly about Kiefer Moore, if you wouldn't mind, guys. As we say, he won a lot of headers, a vast majority of his headers. He was strong as an ox. There was a point in time, I don't know if you saw it, where he was running through on goal. I don't think he had the ball at the time. It was elsewhere, but he was breaking through the center of the pitch, and what's the captain? Brown, isn't it? Was trying to stop him, holding onto his shirt, and he just shrugged him off and brushed him aside. How do you think he's going to be used going forward? Is he going to adapt to us? Are we going to adapt to him? As you guys have already said, he gives us a real option for Hlaki now to get over that press. Hopefully, whether we've been sussed by teams either predominantly getting on Morsey and stopping him from twisting and turning on the edge of the box, but it just gives us another option to dink it over the top. And similarly, long question alert, in relation to Trevor's item here about Chaplin, who says he's been disappointed the last few games, will his appearance now allow more space for the likes of Chaplin, Broadhead, Sarmiento, etc.? Pick the bones out of that question if there ever was one.
Well, I think it was quite telling. The first thing, like you said, the first thing he did in the second half was a flick on, which Chaplin got on the end of, didn't he? And was tearing through, and I think it was deflected out or bundled out for a corner or a goal kick. So it's obviously tough for the likes of Broadhead, Burns and Chaplin without George Hurst in the side for the last 5-6 weeks. Their game has had to obviously adapt, and they've had to do things slightly differently. Now you've got that physical focal point presence up front back. I think we'll see a return to those kind of them arriving on the end of things after great hold-up play from the central striker. And I think we might see a bit of a return to the form they were in earlier in the season, because, you know, their game is so dependent on getting in and behind that central striker, which you just can't do when Caden Jackson is your main number nine. His game is about playing on the shoulder and pace and running the channels, etc. He's not one that's going to hold the ball up for you, and so the likes of Chaplin and Broadhead can make runs past him. So yeah, I think that link up will bring the best out of Chaplin and Broadhead. I agree, Chaplin's been off it now. I know he scored against Sunderland, but he's not really been on it for a little while now, has he? But he does score in purple patches, so hopefully he'll go on a little run now. In terms of will Moore adapt to us, will we adapt to Moore, I think it's a hashtag Dave Diamond little bit of both. He's not going to be able to offer the same pressing, is he, that George Hurst does. We might well see a lot more games. If you have Kiefer Moore on your side, logically you're going to cross a lot more in the air. You know, when Burns and Davis get past their man, normally we look to pull back to the edge of the box or the penalty spot where Chaplin is kind of lurking, and we'll probably you know, amend our game slightly, looking to hit him because they just couldn't deal with him. Those Preston centre halves were big, strong defenders, weren't they? And they couldn't deal with him in the slightest. So we've got another big physical game coming up next week against West Brom with equally sized centre halves, and we might well change things up and look to go more in the air to utilise his very obvious strengths, because he's so strong, isn't he? And like you say, that first goal, he was the only one that was going to win that header and score the goal, and he must be an absolute nightmare for defenders to play against.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, a quick word from our friends and sponsors, and we should be right back with a couple more questions.
Innovation Labs, providing co-working and innovation hubs across East Anglia. We're the perfect place for remote workers, freelancers, startups or innovators to do business. Our unique member network creates extensive business development and collaboration opportunities. Hot desks are available from £20 a day or £99 per month, with business coaching also available from £50. Innovation Labs, turning your ideas into multi-million pound businesses. Located in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, with new sites in Thetford, Norwich and Kuala Lumpur, opening soon.
And while I've got your promo juices running, we've got a promo with our friends at NordVPN, the famous NordVPN. You can head over to NordVPN.com/Blue Monday. There will be a link also in the pod description and underneath the YouTube vid, where you can get a discount, 3 or 4 months, I believe it is, for free. 30-day free trial, etc., etc. Should you ever require a VPN for whatever need, 3 p.m. Saturday afternoons. And a couple of quick hellos and thank you very much is to Richard, who will ask your question to the guys right now. But thank you very, very much for your contribution, Richard. It's very much appreciated. And also, as ever, David, thank you very, very much. You're too generous. But again, thank you for your continued support. Going up to the question about Kiefer Moore, who we've regaled sufficiently, I think. Outside of Kiefer, who else was most responsible for the second half comeback? Mikey?
Well, I think just starting from the back, I actually thought Edmondson reacted quite well to a difficult first half.
That couldn't have been difficult. That first 10 minutes couldn't have been easy for him, could it?
No, and you do worry with Edmondson as well, because he is quite a confidence player, isn't he? And we've seen in the past when he's made mistakes, he hasn't looked the same player. But I thought he recovered quite well. We just managed to get Leif Davis on the ball high up the pitch as well, didn't we? Suddenly, Morsey's tackles were, the ball was rolling and staying with him. We're managing to keep the ball in midfield. And yeah, Al Hamadi as well made a big difference when he came on. They watered that end of the pitch, and we were able to sort of zip the ball about a little bit easier. But yeah, the subs all came on and sort of did their bit, didn't they? Hutchinson was closest to getting the equaliser when he cut in and had a decent shot. He went down the outside of the Preston players a few times. But yeah, it was mostly Moore just caused absolute havoc amongst those defenders. They were scared of him, and we suddenly became really unpredictable, because they hadn't planned for that type of football, had they?
No, that's right. And it'll be interesting to see actually what happens should, I don't know what the finances are involved in this deal, but should he end up scoring 15 goals between now and the end of the season, then, you know, I appreciate he's now in his 30s, I think, but you just do wonder whether he's going to make such an impact. And he's obviously, he's got the championship sussed, hasn't he? From his record, even before us, he's got the championship sussed. You think that whether that'd be a deal to be done, because, say, he just looks a different beast. Fair play to the guy. I said it on the transfer deadline day pod. Fair play to him and whoever's coached him since he left us, because he just looks a transformed player.
Yeah, because even when the ball didn't come into him perfectly, or he didn't get a perfect first touch, he's just in control of his body now. And I can tell you that, and you might be able to agree with me, both of you, both big lads, it's not that easy to have full control of your legs. But there was a few times where he did kind of miscontrol it, but was able to quickly react and just get a toe in and pass the ball back to our midfielders. But yeah, fair play to the bloke. He's just a completely different beast.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we go into the questions, just a quick recap, reminder, or even the first time you've heard of it, the shows we've got coming out this week. Bloody hell, it's a Seb Fest. We've got, not only have you got Seb on a Sunday night, you've got going to have Seb on a Wednesday, where Seb and Rich will be chatting with Gab Sutton, in regards to their predictions and championship review, I believe.
Did one in the summer, so it's just a recap of that.
Yeah. Thursday, we're back to normal, basically. The routine's back in place. So Thursday evening, live, Seb, 8 p.m., West Brom pre-match. Yourself and Rich. And then this time next week, 8 p.m., Sunday night, we're back with the live flagship after the West Brom game. So, yeah, please keep an eye out. Please keep your ears peeled. Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday, going forward this week. There was also a narrow defeat for ITFC Women for the second week in a row against league leaders Play-Up Pompey. A bit of huffing and puffing from town, according to our reporter stroke percussionist. Hit the bar in the first half, but didn't really do enough to get back into it. Next week, they're away at Cheltenham. So in terms of, do you want to go through the results from yesterday at all, guys? Is there anything bloody Southampton won? Piss off, Southampton, as Rich Woodward would say. Southampton won. Leicester struggled to a 5-0 win away at Stoke and probably got booed off by their fans like they did in their last home game, having won. Leeds had a pretty comfortable win, I think, Friday night, all things considered. Oh, actually, I'll quickly get up the table, because as we were driving home last night, we were going through, I always do the predictions like you guys do, me and Oscar do it in the car. The bottom of that table there has got some serious clubs, hasn't it? You think from Millwall in 16th down to 21st Huddersfield, there's 2 points separating a clump of teams, which includes Swansea, Blackburn and Stoke. There's going to be some, nervous owners, you would have thought, and nervous fans down the bottom of the table. It's starting to really, really group up, isn't it, down there? Okay, so in terms of some questions, as you can probably imagine, they're along similar-ish lines, but we'll poke them out and see what the guys have to say about it. We need a plan B, Charlie says, but then Romeo is saying that our plan B was that we've come out the window equipped for the second half of the season. Do we need a plan B, or is, as ever, our plan B just doing plan A better with different players from the bench? Mikey?
Yeah, it does seem to just be a first half is trust the process, and if it isn't working perfectly, then at half time we slightly change things, usually just change the way that we're playing, the aggression and things like that. Conceding so early is becoming a pattern, isn't it? Maybe the plan B would be to try and get to 35 minutes into the match, and or just 10 minutes at 0-0, wouldn't it?
Go on, sorry, Mike, go on, carry on.
McKenna doesn't strike me as the type of manager that will massively change things. When we kick off in the first half, we always play the ball long, and we just basically just accept that we just want to get high up the pitch, low risk strategy, and just
put
get
the press
on the pitch, and exactly. Brighton, who we've been compared to quite a few times, I saw the first goal that they conceded the other night against Luton, and they played some like really beautiful fluid passing and then lost the ball and Luton scored straight away. And I was thinking, oh, I'm glad that we don't do that from kickoff. And then I thought, hang on, we pretty much do it immediately after we've given the ball away after kickoff. But yeah, maybe we will see a slight change against West Brom. Maybe the first time Kladke gets the ball, he chips the ball out to a winger, or maybe even plays the ball long through the middle of the pitch up towards Moore, and then we try and get runners around him. But yeah, it does kind of feel like we maybe do need a bit more in-game management in the first half of games.
And maybe we go long, first of all, just to put a bit of doubt into the opposition's mind, who thinks we're going to go short every single time we've got a goal kick. Question here, Seb. They're both related. I'll put them both up. One from Richard. Does Burgess come straight back in? As he thinks he's done, Edmondson's done quite well. And then also from Andrew, excuse me, with Burgess back in the lineup and Moore starting, might that make us more solid and likely to win in the future? And that sort of links into Mikey's point about how do we make ourselves more solid is one of those ways, by having Cameron Burgess in the back line.
Well, Edmondson's done really well, hasn't he? Since he came in at Stoke, I think he surprised us all. We all expected Twan Zabi to be the partner for Wolfenden during this 5-6 weeks while Burgess has been away. So he's done brilliantly. McKenna clearly does like Burgess. He likes that left-footed option that can make the big switch out to the right flank. And obviously he adds the physical presence. You know, West Brom, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, is going to be a physical game. So I wouldn't necessarily be that surprised. I think it's a bit harsh on George Edmondson. I think he's done pretty well. The own goal yesterday, you know, it's offside, so it's not really his fault. The deflection is unlucky. But I wouldn't be that surprised at all if Burgess were to come back in, because he will add that left-footed option to add a bit of balance and that quick switch, that quick play, whereas sometimes Emerson has to check back onto his right foot, doesn't he? And the physical option for defending set pieces, which is going to be crucially important against the West Brom side, who've got some big old boys in the lineup.
I think Leith Davis is a much better player when we've got Burgess. He just sees so much more of the ball. And I think Burgess maybe dominates that left-sided channel at the back a little bit better than Edmondson does. Edmondson has done really well, and he's slightly more mobile than Burgess. But yeah, we do miss that left foot in centre back. And yeah, it might be a coincidence, but I don't think that we've seen as much of Davis bursting forward as we did when he was in the team.
Yeah. A few questions here. I hope none of you guys have been copying each other's homework, because some very, very similar looking questions in the chat. Richard again, do you think we'll see Moore and Al Hamady play together? One from Steve, Al Hamady and Moore as a starting pair. One from Ashley, do you potentially see Al Hamady and Moore playing up front together? They looked very threatening. And then, so Seb, you can answer that one. Do you think we'll get a point where they'll both play together from the start of the match?
Oh, no, only if we're chasing games. I think Al Hamady can play out wide, can't he? But we know McKenna's style of football is a single front option, so we're not going to suddenly swap it around to go two up top, unless we're, like yesterday, you know, we're chasing games in the last 15, 20 minutes and we need those presence in the box to try and create something. So, yeah, no, I think Al Hamady looks a great prospect. He's probably the Jackson replacement long-term, isn't he? He's the quick option, and I guess he'll look to kind of step in here and there. I think he'll contribute throughout the season, and he can play wide if need be, but I'd be astounded if we saw a major formation change that would be required to play two central strikers, unless we're chasing a game going into the final minutes.
And he looked shorter than I thought he was going to be when I saw him playing yesterday, but spent an awful lot of time standing next to Kiefer Moore, didn't he? Yeah. Interesting. And a couple of questions here in regards to the weekend coming. Romeo is asking about Sarmiento, who was poor yesterday. I thought he was poor in the first half. I actually thought
he was good in the second half, wasn't he?
Second half, yeah, I thought he was much more lively, and I was quite surprised when he was taken off rather than Burns, actually, because I thought he was offering more of a threat than Wes Burns was. But, you know, obviously Burns plays a lot wider, so potentially we'd be using him to stretch the pitch. Sarmiento, yeah. So does Sarmiento play play against his old club? And then similarly, Neil, would you start Moore and Al Hamady? I know, Seb, you just answered that. So we'll go to you, Mikey. Sarmiento, Moore and Al Hamady on Saturday?
I can't see Al Hamady. I can't see him starting. But I could see Sarmiento getting the nod again, although Broadhead was pretty effective when he came on, wasn't he? Burns started against West Brom last time, didn't he? And had a bit of a shock at that. Didn't really work, did it?
I didn't see the West Brom game. I was abroad at the time. But I don't think anyone had a great game, did they?
I know nobody had a good game, but yeah, I think that's one tactical tweak that we could make, is potentially play Hutchinson out on the right, and then just go with our sort of silky, tricky players, trying to get them around more. So if we had Hutchinson, Sarmiento, and who would be the other one, Chaplin, playing in off more, that'd be quite a different look to the team that we've had recently with Jackson and Burns, and just sort of going all out pace. But it'll be interesting one, won't it? And it's not going to be an easy game.
No, it's not. And as Seb says, they're not going to be short at the back either, are they, in terms of their stature? And as Michael asked here about the question, Hutch or Burns on Saturday, I suppose as I said earlier about having Burns, he does just stay wide, doesn't he? Whereas Hutchinson has the tendency, I suppose, to drift in. But it will be something they'll certainly be working on through the course of this week. I do not doubt at all. Just a quick one here for Jason. Jason, that's not a question, my friend. We lost Hurst on Boxing Day. It's not a coincidence we are struggling. That's not a question. But you're right. It's not a coincidence that we are struggling. And as I say, I think the knock-on effect is ripples down through the team, through the number 10s, for example. Big one here for you, Seb. Who starts Saturday? Or what changes would you make from the starting lineup from last Saturday? And then we'll come to you after that, Mikey.
You'll have to tune into the pre-match show to hear Seb's starting lineup for the West Brom game.
And right at the very end of the pre-match show, so you're going to have to watch all of the pre-match show until you get to it.
Well, Moore is the 100% nailed on guarantee, isn't he? You know, barring an injury, that would be astounded if he didn't start. I think Burgess will probably come back into it. And then... Mullet in the car yesterday was musing over would it have been a game for Lewis Travis yesterday, kind of to get stuck in a combative central midfield. And I could see what he was saying. So I wouldn't be that surprised if he maybe came in alongside Morsey to kind of battle with Mowat and the other guy whose name I can't remember. Tune in on Thursday because I'll remember his name by then. In the middle of the park against West Brom. So Burgess for sure, I think. Moore, 100% definite. I like the idea of Hutchinson coming on the right, like Mikey just said. Burns has looked slightly off it the last few games, coinciding with his haircut, which I guess we're going to have to discuss at some point. But yeah, the Moore is the 100% guaranteed. And maybe just Travis, just to make them central midfield combative and, you know, get stuck in and try and win that particular battle, because that'd be quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, there's no need to be bitter about things, talking about ploughed fields, etc. You know, we just have to take it. Not every pitch we're ploughing is going to be a carpet, unfortunately.
Yeah, but in answer to his question, though, Swansea's pitch apparently is really bad.
Is it?
I think they play, or Ospreys still play
rugby.
There?
Yeah.
And is Plymouth's pitch going to be really good? I'm not sure. But yeah, we're going to have to, yeah, like you say, we're going to have to get used to it, because this time of the year, you will play on some dodgy pitches.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
We were doing that in our good last season, weren't we? So
yeah,
although our best results did sort of come at some of the bigger teams, but yeah, that we're going to play on some dodgy pitches.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I think we're almost here. One last one from Matt. I hope you were listening at the very beginning of the pod back, because we did kind of go through this, but Seb, does dropping out the top two take a degree of pressure off of us?
Like I said earlier, I don't think it's on us, to be honest. I think we can now hopefully go quietly about our business. And what did Paul Lambert say once? It's better to be the hunted than to be... There you go. Yeah, like Romeo says, the hunted becomes the hunter. I remember Lambert saying that after we'd dropped off the top of the table and dropped down to fourth or fifth or whatever. But obviously that was a completely different scenario. So yeah, maybe we can quietly go about our business. The fixture list gets a little bit kinder after West Brom, doesn't it? With the likes of Rotherham to come to Portman Road, Birmingham to come to Portman Road, Swansea away. So there are some winnable games coming up in the next kind of 9-10 weeks or so. So if we can just go about our business quietly, integrate more, and let's see where we stand coming into the Easter break.
Yeah, absolutely. Case of hold your nerve, everyone, I think is where we're at.
Southampton will drop points. It will happen, won't it? I know they're on this incredible run, ridiculous run, but is it start of March or first week of March they're going to Leicester? So keep in touch, and hopefully at some point they will start to...
So what Seb is saying, they'll drop 3 points in March.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your input. As I say, it's good to see you yesterday. Thank you for everyone who's joined us in the chat. It's been absolutely fantastic. Lots of questions. Thank you very much for that. As I say, this week, look out for our bits and pieces, our output on Wednesday, Thursday and Sunday. Hope everyone has a good week. As I say, just hold your nerve, everybody. And yeah, we'll see you soon.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.